Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to be talking about the Billy Meyer case this afternoon. Contact Report 452, specifically, Billy and Patah are having a conversation here, and this took place on July 7th, 2007. And they're talking about a group of extraterrestrials called the Pegasus Refugees. And this is something I wasn't aware of, although I may have read it and just for some reason it didn't register. But the Pegasus Refugees were a group of extraterrestrials that came to the Earth, and they were from a space-time shifted area of the Pegasus constellation. For one reason or another, they kind of aligned themselves with the Giza intelligences, and they lived on a strange world, evidently, where they breathed what would be to us poison gas. So for them to survive on the Earth, they had to have a respirator constantly. Well, at some point, their ship had to make an emergency landing in Brazil, and it was captured by a group of Nazis who were in Brazil at the time. And I believe that's when the Pegasus group died, because of their respiration failed. Evidently, these Pegasus refugees attempted to cause damage to Billy's group, his the Semyase Silver Star Center there. I think they were using some kind of oscillation vibrator, which was working on a microwave basis, and I don't know if it would just destroy the building and the people or affected the people as well. It's hard to say, but this was a kind of an interesting contact. I thought I would share it with you. I just kind of gave you what I think is the most interesting summary of the whole thing. And I'll just read a section here. The refugees belong to a splinter group of the Giza intelligences who lived in a space-time displaced region of the Pegasus constellation and who had entered an alliance with the faction living on the Earth. Therefore, they were counted as one of the Giza intelligences and consequently were not described as foreigners, Earth foreigners, which is kind of strange. But so it goes on to talk a little bit more about the Giza intelligences in this contact report, which I've talked about many times before, but feel like that there's so much to wrap your mind around there. So this, I just want to speak just real briefly about this Nazi Brazilian group in, there was a Nazi group left over from World War II, some of the officers that went to Brazil after the war. And I'll read just a little bit of this here. It says, then, however, I have a problem again, in fact, with the extraterrestrial aircraft that the Brazilian group had, from which I was set about in the year 1976, and I guess they're talking about a place in Brazil called Winkelried, or Weizsäcker. You told me at that time, which unfortunately was not recorded in any contract report, that it concerned a beam ship which was indeed piloted by people from a distant galaxy, and in fact with poison gas breathers or such. That they, however, were members of your federation. I don't think they were members of the federation here, but they go on and talk about this group. In other words, this ship wasn't a ship that this Brazilian group had built, but it was kind of loot. They stole this ship, evidently. The interstellar drive also was damaged by the Giza intelligences. I guess the Giza intelligences didn't want them to go back home. Strange and very interesting. So, Okay, and I'll read this quickly. All members of the group, which was the Brazilian group in Brazil, were former officers of the German Empire who escaped from Germany to Brazil. They were mainly the leading lights and henchmen of the Nazi Empire. What they were there for, escape war criminals. So this is a very interesting report. It's Contact Report 452. And it's something you can look at your leisure, something that hopefully maybe I'll brush back over again and we'll talk about in a little more detail someday. And again, that contact occurred between Ptah and Billy on July 7th, 2007 at 3:11 p.m. Well, Edward Albert Meyer is a man in Switzerland. He's 80 years old now. And I think in one of his movies, I recently heard him say that he had written 50 books. I know that I've heard other people mention that he's written over 40 books. I think Michael Udebrook from Figu, Canada, mentioned that in one of his presentations. The book that I keep reading over and over and over again is called The Might of Thoughts. And I think it's a very critical book to try to – it has a lot of information in it that I think we should gain mastery of or try to gain mastery of. So, and we'll hopefully get to that a little bit later in the show as well. I thought I would talk for maybe briefly about the Giza intelligences. They can be traced all the way back to Eris the Barbarian. Eris the Barbarian was a guy who came to the Earth from Beta Centauri. And when we're talking about Atlantis and Lemuria, we have to go back in time about 133,000 years. And Eris the Barbarian, what is called a king of wisdom. He was an Ishwish, as it's known as. A king of wisdom, but not in the spiritual teachings by any means. He came here, and I think his group went to Hyperborea, and I believe he took over Hyperborea. His son, Arian, conquered India at that time. Remember, Hyperborea was in the north, in the North Pole, and it was a perfect climate. 70, 80 degrees all year round, fruit trees, beautiful, sunny, very different than it is now. Eventually, Eris the Barbarian got the Great War between Atlantis and Lemuria started. You might think of him as a terrorist in some way. And the two great powers almost completely destroyed the Earth. The final blow was struck by the people from Mu, who brought in an asteroid from the destroyed planet Melona, slammed it into the Earth with an anti-gravity drive and some kind of nuclear power drive. It came into the atmosphere and it ignited and it made this horrific howling sound and it exploded and with a force of thousands of atomic bombs, two great parts of this meteor split apart like two great fists and slammed into the Atlantic Ocean and tore the crust of the Earth and set off volcanoes and earthquakes and a gigantic tidal wave formed and the destruction went over the whole Earth. Now this occurred about 12,000 years ago. And it was the great event which wiped out the advanced civilization that was on the Earth at that time. Now, the people who survived were thrown back into the Stone Age for centuries and centuries, and they lost their history, they lost their knowledge, they lost their memories. They were a society with amnesia, so to speak. And it wasn't maybe 700 years or it was centuries and centuries later that the extraterrestrials that came back, the one who was the distant descendant of Eris the barbarian was a man named Eris the 11th. And this is pre-Giza intelligences, but they were basically extraterrestrial humans that were here on the Earth that presented themselves as the creators to the primitive, now especially primitive, Earth humans and survivors of Atlantis and Lemuria. So Eris the 11th was 11 generations from Eris the Barbarian. He was murdered by his son Jehovan. Jehovan was murdered by his son Jehave. And it was about 3,660 years ago that Jehave killed his father, Jehovan, and Jehave was wicked. He screamed for blood and revenge. He also let himself be proclaimed as the creator. You have to imagine, it was not a good time on the earth. And eventually Jehave was killed by Erisim. Jehave had three sons, Ptah, Solomon, Erisim. Ptah and Solomon drove Erisim off the earth. But he came back. He secretly returned to the earth and he settled down with his army in the land of Egypt. In the old cubicle constructions that existed for more than 70,000 years that were below the pyramids, deep in the interior of the earth, they converted rooms and constructions for their center for their wicked purposes. And this was about 3010 BCE that Erisim was in power. Now, Erisim was thrown out of power by his nephew, I believe, who was later called Jehovah. Jehovah is mentioned in the Bible. Jehovah is the God of the Old Testament. And I like to keep an open mind about all of this, you know, and try to tell myself I'm not certain that the Meyer case is correct, but it certainly logically fits. So let me, in Contact Report 38, Jehovah is mentioned. So I'll start here. It says, first of all, we'll start with Erisim. One of the most greedy for power at the time was Erisim, who, with a group of many thousands individuals of the actual size of the group, in this report they're called the Celestial Sons. So the Celestial Sons, I guess, were the Pleiaren. Remember, the Giza intelligences were a splinter group of the Pleiaren, and the Celestial Sons withdrew. So they went back to their home in the Pleiaren star system. But Erisim decided he wanted to make the Earth and its forms of life subordinate to him. And his way of obtaining this goal was using misleading and wrongly cultic teachings. So he very skillfully wove this into a religious teachings. And he had emissaries in Earth humans who succumbed to him. And he mixed the teachings among the Earth humans, and soon he won many followers with this false teaching. And his biggest followers were the gypsies on the Nile and the further vicinity of the Mediterranean Sea and Red Sea, who fanatically hung on to this false teaching and spread it. But I guess a group of the Hebrews actually went away from this teaching, which in our historic point of view we don't really think of, but I'd have to go back and read my Bible to really understand, because I think the Jews, or at least a good group of the Jews, did rebel, and I remember a lot of them were killed. But let me continue here. But the Hebrews, because it was they, freed themselves later from this rule, as Erisim had to cede control to his successor, who was then named Jehovah, and so forth in the tongue of the earth people. Having grown in number of their people, the Hebrews created their own power, selected for themselves chosen ones, etc., etc. And it talks about Comegal, who came after Jehovah. And it says here, very interesting, like no ruler before him, Comegal the first forced all the terrestrial religions into the frame of blood-demanding cults, which unfortunately were able to be maintained on the earth up to the current time. And one of the things I think of when I read this is Numbers 31, where the Israel's army was commanded by Moses to kill the Midianites. They killed all the men, all the Midianite soldiers, and Moses said, go back, kill the women and children, but keep the virgins for yourself, which they did do. They killed the women and the children. I don't know at what age a female was allowed to be kept. And there were actually, if you read that closely, that chapter, 32,000 women were taken by the Israeli army. I don't know if you call them concubines, sex slaves, or what. So, but that was under Jehovah's rule, my understanding. Now, Comegal came a little later. And Comegal, well, let me read this just shortly. However, also Comegal the first could not assert his position of power because after he had created for himself a center and headquarters deep in the surface of the pyramids, he was overthrown and disempowered by Comegal the second. So Comegal the first forced all terrestrial religions into this blood-demanding cult, but eventually he was killed by his son, which is the pattern that formed with the Yid intelligences. And in many things, he was more malicious than his father, which he also soon proved through the introduction of monstrous mass killings of earth people. This is much like what happened in Numbers 31. Very many bloody events on the earth, which were carried out through cultic religions and truth, concerned the will and the influencing of Comegal II. So I don't know the exact timing of all this, but I suspect Comegal II was a while after Jehovah. I know Comegal, one of the two Comegals, lived for an incredibly long time. And it's interesting, Giza intelligence is spelled differently in different contact reports. And sometimes they're called the Befath. And they were deported by the Plearen off of Earth in May of 1978. Okay, and this would be interesting to a lot of people. I've touched on this before slightly. Comegal I now selected one of his cousins as the authority over a group of thousands of individuals which had a quite special mission to fulfill, or would have had. This mission was essentially based on the telenautic guiding of a various group of humans of Arabic descent in certain paths, in particular in Germany, America, Argentina, Brazil, in order that they unconsciously perform help for the plans of Comegal. Now, this are these telenautic impulses, I think, that I've read about before. During the first time period, Arisaig, therefore Ashtar Sharon, and whatever his other names may yet be, followed these orders unconditionally. So thereby, Comegal further gained great power. But in the course of time, he obtained many kinds of understanding and modified his behavior. Until then, he acted only according to the orders of Comegal. So he only modified his tactic unnoticeably and thereby influenced, firstly, his assembly, which he indeed required. By and by, he obtained their trust and acknowledged him as their actual leader. And they're talking about Arisaig. And since Arisaig followed his mission imposed by Kamigal to a degree and transmitted his messages to various Earth humans using telepathic impulses. So there was a group on the Earth from Germany, America, Argentina, Brazil that were guided based on telenautic guiding. Unconsciously, they would perform the plans of Kamigal. This happened in 1933. So Kamigal the First, I assume, was on the Earth when doing this at this time. This is true. I guess this is true. This is Contact Report 38. Now, I've talked about before Hermann Steinschneider, who was known as Erik Jonassen, who was influenced by the Giza intelligences, and it was right about this time as well. Bear with me here. I'm kind of going back through this on the fly. This is such interesting stuff. So this Astar Sharon, or Arisaig, sprung off the Giza intelligences, and he kind of became autonomous. And I think eventually he became somewhat of a spiritual person. He kind of chose a different life path eventually, if I remember correctly. So I guess it was Kamigal the First who sometimes when you read through these, yes, it was Kamigal the First, now select one of his cousins as a, over a group of thousands of individuals who had a special mission. 1933. I mean, this is history. Fascinating stuff. The Meyer material is astonishing. It really, really is. It just keeps on keeping on. I was talking about Jehovah, who was before Kamigal the First. I believe that Kamigal the First came after him. So Jehovah, and if you remember, Abraham, Genesis 22:14, Jehovah appears, and Abraham is about to sacrifice his son to Jehovah. This is, I guess, the way to prove yourself as loyal to these Giza intelligences, is to be willing to sacrifice your son. You know, if you take your mind out of the religious fog, you start to see this for what it was, and it's ghastly. It's a ghastly thing that happened on the Earth. It's like a cargo cult. It's like the people of the Earth, many of us, were in a cargo cult. We were completely blindly fooled into this, according to Meyer information. I'll definitely keep an open mind. I try to stay neutral about this, but the more I study this, there's a guy named Mauro Biglino, and he's probably the best Hebrew translator that I've ever heard of. He has translated 17 volumes, something like 17 volumes of literal translations from the Old Testament. And he has a very different take on it. I mean, he did like 28 total translations for the Vatican. And then when he started in on this Old Testament translation, they broke off their contact with him because he went away from the traditional view of what the Old Testament is telling us. Which aligns perfectly with the Meyer information. One of the interesting things that Mara Beglino talks about is something called the word Ruach, which he says it does not mean spirit. Now, it's translated as the Spirit of God that's hovering over the waters here. It means wind, or anything flying in the air quickly causing a wind. There's nothing theological here. In fact, he said Hebrew came from the Sumerian pictograms, and if you look at the Sumerian pictogram for the word Ruach, it looks like some kind of flying craft, almost somewhat this shape. Very interesting. Elohim's Ruach, he says, was hovering on the water. Hovering was used as a participle. The same word Ruach is used in other parts of the Bible, indicating the typical way of flying of rapacious birds, carrying them on the wind. You know, rapacious birds, bigger birds, they don't even have to flap their wings much. They just fly by keeping their wings out. So anyway. Ah, interesting. 2080 BC is when Hen was thrown out of power by Comagall the First. So Comagall probably lived until about the 1930s or so. If what I was reading in, I believe that was Contact Report 82, perhaps. So in 38, Contact Report 38. So Jehovah is thrown out of power by Comagall the First at about 2080 BC. And shortly thereafter, he starts this telepathic guiding of people in the United States, Germany, Argentina, Brazil, America, to perform his wishes. He was guiding them unconsciously. This is the telenotic impulses. And this is when Comagall the First took over. And so this is when Hermann Steinschneider was involved in all of that. This is some very strange stuff. I see some folks joining me in the chat room here. Boy, if you've never heard this before, this is going to be weird and shocking. But according to the Meyer information, Jehovah, this is about 2080 or probably a little bit before then, maybe as far back as about 3000 BC. Jehovah destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah with atomic weapons. But on the other hand, a meteor fell at this time and also exploded high over the two cities. There was also a massive earthquake, which the earth was torn open like at Petra, similar to an underground volcanic activity. And chunks of sulfur were flung high and across the country, caused all kinds of disaster. In Contact 2:15, verse 120, it says, the remaining part of the total destruction was caused by the megalomaniac and crazy god of the Hebrews. I'm just reading what it says here. An extraterrestrial who had his headquarters deep under the Pyramid of Giza. His punishment for the disobedience of the population of Sodom and Gomorrah against his commands was that he let two small atomic bombs ignite over the cities, which finally leveled everything, killing all humans and animals. I'll let you decide whether that is true or not. It has a pretty ghastly ring of truth to me. The Pyramid of Giza. Let's talk a little bit about the Great Pyramid of Giza. It's the oldest and the largest of the three pyramids in the Giza Plateau. Billy talks about pyramids constructed all over the globe. They were constructed under the direction of extraterrestrials. There was a group from Orion here that constructed who guided the construction of the pyramids. Earth humans did do some work here. The Orion constellation is a prominent constellation located at the equator, visible throughout the world. And these extraterrestrials came from Orion, and it has 8 stars within 32 light years. So these people traveled at a great distance. Just a few facts about the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid is 481 feet tall. It was built 73,300 years ago. Well, there was also a group of pyramids built at 36,000 years ago. So the Great Pyramid is much, 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 much older than even the progressive archaeologists who, with an open mind, who realized that there had to be an advanced civilization on the Earth, don't realize how old this structure is. It's much older than they think. They think that the strange animal human, as Billy calls it, the Sphinx, is only, they say, 13,000-14,000 years old. Of course, mainstream science only says 2,000-4,000 years old. The Great Pyramid is 73,000 years old. And King Seleuc used the Great Pyramid as a refuge for a great flood, which occurred in 9,545 BC. His son, Sarid, was having these visions about this great flood. And this great flood was caused by this, what's called the Destroyer Comet, that used to come close to the Earth at this time. A few construction facts. Only a small part of the work was done with the aid of telekinetic forces. The Great Pyramid is a very, very interesting thing. Wow. I guess we've taken a step back in time today. I'm going to talk a little bit about Billy and a little bit about the spiritual teachings and a little bit overview on his life. Since we maybe have some people that are hearing some of this for the first time. Billy's 80 years old. He lives in Switzerland. He's an extremely prolific author. He's written somewhere between 40 and 50 books. 4 of his books I've read. One of them is called The Might of Thoughts, Mach der Gedanken, and the other one called The Way to Live, The Psyche, and there's The Goblet of Truth. His books are bilingual. He writes in German and English. All of these are nonfiction. The Might of Thoughts is a book that teaches us how to control our thoughts. Billy's contacts with extraterrestrials began when he was a 5-year-old boy growing up in northern Switzerland in Bulak. He grew up in a village called Niederflux, near the Bruder and Eichenmoser Mountains, where there were beautiful forests and also beautiful meadows. Billy started having telepathic contacts from an extraterrestrial Plejaran man. And he had these contacts when he was about 5 years old. At his second contact, Svath brought him up into his ship. And it says in the Meyer reports that he was brought up as if by ghostly hands, some kind of technology. Svoth was a 1,000-year-old extraterrestrial human from the Pleiaren star system, and he was on Earth to be Billy's mentor. These extraterrestrials have a technology that is able to track what's called the spirit form in the human. We have in the center of our middle brain a tiny fragment of the universal consciousness. It's the part of us that never dies. And our spirit form has many incarnations, many lives. And these extraterrestrials had seen that the same spirit form that was in this young boy in Switzerland had been in the people that today we know as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. So they wanted to help him in his mission, which was the writing down of what's called teaching of the spirit or the spiritual teachings, so that in the future, not so much for the people now, there's a small group now that have picked up these teachings, but in the future, about 800 years to now, from now, the whole earth allegedly will be at a point where they will benefit from this teaching. But his spirit form is very, very ancient. The spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer is very, very ancient, and it's referred to as the Universal Prophet. One of his previous incarnations was 9.6 billion years ago as a person called Nokodamian, who lived originally on a planet called Sadar that was some 3 billion light years from the Earth in another galaxy called the Lyran Galaxy. And he was a great teacher at this time. Even the Pleiaren didn't know that Billy had been their teacher, Nokodamian, in the long, long past. Also, as the Universal Prophet, he's been another teacher called Henoch. And there were multiple incarnations of this man called Henoch. And this occurred about 389,000 years ago. And I'll read something here that's mentioned, I think, in Svoth's explanation. Remember, Billy's first mentor was this man named Svoth. And it says here, for the spiritual teaching, which has been the teaching of Nokodamian Henoch, and all your former personality since time immemorial, you should, as it was in all past times, only require a reciprocal gift, a will to learn love, peace, freedom, harmony, joy, diligence, equitableness, and humaneness, as well as the quality of being human, not, however, any material things through which you could achieve wealth. Because if you want to acquire such, you should create this through the work of your hands, not, however, by growing rich through the teaching. So one of the things that Svoth told Billy, and I'll have to go back to Svoth's explanation, I didn't think they realized that he was a Nokodamian in his earlier lives. So I'm going to have to, you know, the one thing I find when I study this material, there's so much of it. And you really have to pay real close attention to all the little subtle details, because there are so many. So Billy, the person, the current incarnation of Edward Albert Meyer, is, we know him as Billy. In previous life, he's been a teacher. He's been a teacher on other worlds. And he teaches what's called the spiritual teachings. The spiritual teachings, one of the spiritual teachings deals with reincarnation. And as I was describing earlier, we all have in the center of our middle brain a spirit form. The spirit form is your real self. It's your inner I. Your personality can be influenced by your spirit form, or it can be influenced by what's called a false self, or sometimes called the errat self, errat self. So we have these two conflicting in ourselves. One is influenced by the spirit form. Now, the spirit form has a central controlling factor. It's called the Gemüt. The Gemüt is one of its functions is generating what are called these harmonious swinging waves, which I believe create kind of a harmony in the psyche. Our material consciousness has a controlling factor called the psyche, which is influenced by the harmonious waves, the swinging waves of the Gemüt. The psyche is your material consciousness, which is your conscious mind, your subconscious mind, your unconscious mind. It's who you are in the current lifetime. Your spirit form encompasses who you are in all of your lifetimes. It is not totally aware, your spirit form, in the way the material consciousness is. It is focused on, in many ways, recording what's going on in your life. Semyase, Billy's third contact, said, the spirit form, every human has a spirit. It never dies and it never sleeps. It records everything that we do, all of your impulsations. It's the wonder of all wonders, she called it. And your spirit form is invulnerable to any damage that can come from the material realm. Your spirit form can never have a nervous breakdown. It will never be even upset. It's always neutral, positive in its thinking. And it has thinking and feelings, your spirit form does, and it sends impulses to your material consciousness. Now, your material consciousness also has a connection to your previous lives, but only your subconscious really does. Programmed into your subconsciousness are all of the evolutive values from your previous life, like your love, your wisdom, your discernment, your logic, your reasonableness, your optimism, your confidence. All these kinds of evolutive values are stored in your subconscious. So this will kind of give you, as you're growing up, you know, you got to grow up each lifetime. You'll get impulses from your evolutive values stored in your subconsciousness. You also get impulses from what are called the storage banks. And there are universal storage banks, there are planetary storage banks, and there are solar system storage banks. And they contain everything that's happened in every one of your previous lives. And your new thoughts will resonate at the same frequency as the thoughts in your previous lives. So there's kind of a natural connection there where you can be influenced by these knowledge from your previous lives. We don't really know how to pull that information down. Billy does. You see, we're still at a very primitive level of evolvement here on the earth. We go through seven levels of evolution. Humanity does, the first being primitive, the second being rational life. Most of us here on the earth are in what's rational life, where we know how to be rational. We don't always act rational. We know how to figure things out using our logic and our reasoning, but we don't always do that. Sometimes we're overcome by our emotions and our other wrong thinking. That's one of the important aspects of the spiritual teaching. Hopefully we'll talk a little bit about today, is the importance of learning to control our thoughts. And we're a primitive people still. We're still in the rational stage of life, which is the second stage. So one of the things we really have to master is maintaining a neutral, positive thinking, a harmonious thinking, because your thoughts have incredible power. And if you allow them to become negative, you can do great damage in your life through negative thinking. Good thinking leads to good feelings. Good feelings lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. You are in control of your life. You are the master of your own destiny. Your thoughts have a tremendous power, and they will manifest in reality. So if you have a negative thoughts, you're going to manifest a negative circumstance in your life. So we want to train ourselves to think neutral positive. How can we do that? One of the things I've learned to do by studying this book over and over again is to tell myself the following six things. And this is all of these principles are mentioned in the book, in the Mind of Thoughts book. Tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm cheerful, I'm relaxed. That's an important one, because creative or constructive thoughts bring a calm with them. So tell yourself, I'm relaxed. Then also tell yourself that I'm enthusiastic. Enthusiasm really sends a surge of energy throughout your whole psyche. And that's when you can really start to be successful, when you have that enthusiasm. And also tell yourself you're thankful. So that's what we're struggling with here on the earth at our second stage of evolution, which is rational life, is learning to control our thinking. Eventually, as we control our thinking more and more and more, we're going to get to intelligent life, which is stage three. Maybe some of us are already there. And then comes real life. You know, the Meyer material says there are about 7 million solar systems in the Milky Way galaxy which can support higher life. About 2,600,000 of these solar systems have human beings in them already. But the problem in our dimension is that there are great distances between habitable worlds, and that's why we are still struggling to understand our universe and our place in our universe. Well, there are other civilizations out there at the fourth level of evolvement, which let me just call real life now. And this is all discussed in Contact Report 6. Semyase's civilization, when they were in stage 4 of evolution, and probably some of their people are still in stage 4, some are in stage 5, but in stage 4 is real life. And these extraterrestrial groups become great genetic engineers. And they can actually create biological sentient life at this point. Now, for people that are heavily influenced by religion, this is a great a blasphemy or a great insult to their whole thought processes, because this is something that only God allegedly can do, but this is not true. When we reach this stage of evolution, we can do tremendous things where we create biological intelligence, sentient life. And Semyase's ship had a biological organic intelligence, which she had telepathic contact with. She could have a telepathic conversation with the central computer on her ship. And her ship was essentially a living being with a metallic hull. This is astonishing to us. Now, the fifth stage of evolution is something called the King of Wisdom or the Ishwish. These people have incredible abilities, not only telepathic, but telekinetic, teleportation. They can do things that we can't even really wrap our mind around. The Ishwish can. And then the sixth stage of human evolution is kind of this physical, non-physical state where you're partially physical, but also partially spiritual, so you're not really in a physical body, completely physical body anymore. We spend about 25, 30 million years in that state, 40 to 60 million years during the first five stages. Stage six, when we leave that stage, we go into a purely spiritual state, which we last in that state billions of years before we eventually merge with what's called creation. What is creation? Creation is the universal intelligence. Creation is, it is the intelligence that controls the evolution of the universe that we're currently in. It, in part, was involved in the Big Bang. Creation is identical to universal consciousness. You could think of the universe as the internal and external body of the universal consciousness. And the universal consciousness, or the creation, has created laws for our universe. And the law of love is the highest law in this universe. And there's many beautiful things written in the Meyer material about this creational natural law called love. And it is, it goes something like this. Love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation radiates love so that a human being comes up against the radiating love of creation all the time. But many times we turn away from love and we turn away from creation. And because of that, the earth, the world, seems like a very difficult place to us. Later, Billy in The Goblet of Truth would write that rivers, stones, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And death is just the passage, the rebirth into the world of pure spirit. Many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations, and they're aware of each other, and they communicate with one another. So this whole process of nature that I'm describing to you is the law of love in operation. Well, the other law that takes place is the fundamental law of all evolution, which is the law of striving. Without striving, there is no life. And let me read something I read a lot in this show about the law of striving. Because if you don't follow the law of striving, you can't really have any happiness in your life. If you're pursuing pleasure, if you're pursuing entertainment, if you're pursuing some kind of stimulation, you will not be happy. Because the really only true satisfaction comes from striving, from activities which are involved in striving, which is the also ultimately is the evolution of your consciousness. Let me read this. Striving means delectation, which means satisfaction, in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. So striving is always fulfilling. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. So if you're not striving, you're going to have affliction in your life. You're going to have all kinds of hell in your life if you're not striving. If you're not striving enough. If you have inhibited striving, which means you're not striving enough, then you will have an inhibited life. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution, because the more you strive, the more you evolve. Even when you're doing simple tasks, it has a way of evolving you. Even if you're working in your garage, which is something I do a fair amount, that will help you with your evolution. It's a very interesting law of the universe. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution, stagnation, and hopelessness. If you have hopelessness and grief and confusion in your life, what you need is to do more striving. Striving isn't only what you do in your day job. Striving is your hobbies. Striving is anything you're working at to achieve some target, some endpoint, is a form of striving, and you can learn from this. If you do not strive, you will have confusion, grief, irrationality, joylessness, cognitionless, unpeace, disharmony, and it goes on and on and on and on. That you literally have to learn to organize your life around striving. That's the key to happiness. Without striving, there is no life. There is no sense of life. There's no happiness. This is the second law of the universe under love, striving. Resentment, if you don't strive, you'll bring lies into your life. You'll bring self-deceit, reluctance for life. So striving is so important. Therefore, delectation, harmony, and happiness, as well as everything positive, as well as grief and everything negative, are in the end only the revelation of how pronounced striving is in any life form. So what I'm talking about here, you know, people come to the show and he's not talking about exopolitics. Well, believe it or not, I am. What's going on now is very bizarre, because we have like two stages of disclosure going on at the moment. One is just the disclosure of extraterrestrial life, which is important, cognition. And the second is the spiritual and social advancement of the human race, of the Earth humans. And this is really the real purpose for disclosure, so that we don't destroy ourselves, so that we can become a balanced, harmonious, peaceful society, which will not destroy the Earth the way we almost did in the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. So I want to let you know I appreciate the people that listened in the chat room today, and I appreciate all the people that will listen to these archives. I hope this information is as fascinating to you as it is me, because 2020, we're coming up on the time when we could see a possible collapse of the United States. So let's not let that happen. Keep striving, keep studying this material. We'll see you next time. This is Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Mark Snyder, have a great afternoon. Have a great evening. Hopefully we'll be back soon. Talk to you later.